Randy.
And I'm Claire.
And you're listening to Killer Vibes,
a true crime podcast.
This is the last episode in our season,
and
we're going to just jump right into some murder.
Great.
That's
Let's
what
do
you're
it.
Here for.
Yeah.
Okay. So on August 6th, 2004, a woman named Denise was living with a man who went by the name of Cutthroat, and he's kind of a pimp, kind of.
So describe to me how you're kind of a pimp.
Okay. So he was a drug dealer, and he's like 24, and Denise is 16, and she's a runaway, and she's living with him. So the kind of a pimp part happens on this evening when he says, you know what? You need to go make me some money. Go do that.
Oh.
So that's the kind of a pimp part.
Okay.
Because I looked it up, and it's not like he is awful. He drug dealer, which isn't inherently awful, but in this case is. Mm-hmm. And then also he sexually and emotionally and physically abused Denise a lot.
Okay.
Like he choked her so severely one time that she passed out. Like, so,
oh my God.
It's one of those situations where you're like you ran away from home and you are living with, I mean, he's a pimp. I don't know what else to call him. Okay.
I get it. So okay. We're on the same page.
Yes. So on this night, also we're in Nashville, Tennessee, by the way.
Okay.
On this night, he's like, leave and then come back with money. And being 16, Denise is like, okay, sex work. Like that's the only thing she can think of to do.
Sure.
She goes to this part of town. It's like East Nashville that's pretty popular for sex work and just kind of like stands around and waits for someone to notice her. So a man, a 40-year-old real estate agent named Johnny Allen, approaches and solicits her. And he asks her for $200. She asks for $200. He says, I'll give you $100. They settle on 150, like that whole thing.
There you go, yeah.
So then she gets into his car and, you know, they're going to have this whole situation.
Yeah.
I would just like to disclaimer that I don't think sex work is a bad occupation. And I don't think that anyone should view it negatively or this as this really stigmatized thing. But in this case, Denise is obviously forced into the situation and that is the case often, and so it's really sad that she had to do it. Obviously, it's not like she's excited about it or wants to do it. Not that anyone's like pumped about it ever, sometimes it's a necessity, and women are strong, and they get through it, and they do it, and it's to support themselves or their families, and it's a really respectable thing.
Absolutely, and I think the time when sex work becomes, you know, not a good thing is through sex trafficking.
Mm-hmm.
And
which is obviously this.
Yes, which is clearly to a different degree, obviously, than some other things. But yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, like, sex trafficking, sometimes they lock women up in cages in the basement and they make them go out all the time.
Okay,
and this is
saying.
Like,
well, yeah.
This
so there's like their sex trafficking rings.
Yes.
And
yes.
Then there's like sex trafficking in the basic sense is that you transport someone to a place for sex.
Yeah.
So if anyone picks anyone up on the side of the road, drives them somewhere to have sex with them, that they're being sex trafficked. But I get what you're saying.
That's new for me.
So yeah, you're thinking of like taken kind of things.
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
That happens. So she gets in his car and he is like, are you hungry? And she's like, yes. And so he takes her to Sonic. They get some food. And I think he assumed that she was homeless, which is so why he offered to get her food. They get food at Sonic, and then Denise is like, let's go to this nearby hotel. Like, there's a hotel right here. And he's like, no, let's go to my house because no one's there and we'll have more privacy, which is kind of creepy.
Yeah, I don't know. I would, if I were in the position of a sex worker, I would probably prefer a secondary location just to, like, you know, sort of like just be separated out from both your life and their life and just one location where you don't have to do anything other than the thing and then leave.
Totally. And you're also, if you're in a hotel, there's people around you if something
exactly.
goes south, which I feel like that is like the most terrifying thing about sex work, which makes me respect them so much, is that they don't know if they're going to someone's house to get murdered or not. I mean, because we have the Long Island serial killer who comes about actually about 5 years after this or so, who strictly murdered sex workers. I think that there's just this level of danger to the job, which is terrifying.
Yeah, there absolutely is.
And so I just think about how scared she probably was when he was like, no, let's go back to my house where no one is.
Yeah, but not about that.
Yeah, but she didn't love the idea, but she needed to bring money back. Right. So she's kind of trapped in this situation that's really not uncommon for victims of abuse to have this like kind of narrow, like, I just need to get money because that's what this guy told me to do. That's what I have to do. So she's getting her job done.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So they go to his house, and while they're driving there, Johnny starts telling her all about his accomplishments in the Army, tells her that he's a really good shooter, which is creepy. And then he says that, like, he's kind of this well-known guy in Nashville and that a lot of women want him for his money, but that he wants someone who will make love to him with desire.
Okay.
So.
Okay, Johnny.
Johnny's a
creep. Chill out.
Gross.
Ew. The word desire is just.
Is weird.
It's not the right word for that. Anyway.
So they get to his house, and so Johnny, like, shows her to the dinner table where she, like, eats her Sonic. And while she's eating, he shows her 3 guns. Mm-hmm. It's like, look at my cool guns. And 2 of them are, like, really big rifles, and 1's a smaller gun. Denise is, like, really smart and very perceptive. I don't know if that comes from her just being really naturally intelligent or from her experiences in life where she, like, has to be, like, on her toes all the time, or probably both is what it is, nature and nurture. But she notices him put the 2 rifles away, but she doesn't see what he does with the smaller gun.
Creepy.
So she's, like, on edge, a little nervous. Yeah. But then she remembers that she has a gun in her purse because, as a sex worker, you're probably going to have some form of protection with
something,
you.
Something, yeah. To whatever degree that level of protection may be, whether it's like a knife or a pepper spray or a firearm if necessary.
And it was just she had a small gun in her purse. That's what she had. And she had.
Yeah, a little 22 pistol.
I think it was like a 40 caliber gun, like, but still small. I don't know anything about guns. I read 40 caliber.
Cool.
Yeah. So she had bought it off of someone on the streets a couple weeks back, and she just kind of knew that this is where that relationship was going with Cutthroat, and figured she better have some sort of protection just in case this happened, which it did. Mm-hmm. And also, he's like choking her and assaulting her all the time and raping her.
Either of these people, no. Cutthroat or Johnny, they just both seem.
Yeah.
Sorry.
They are. But so she is like, you know what? I have protection myself. I'll just keep my bag nearby. Like, I have to do this.
That's actually probably a smart idea to not draw attention to the fact that you've noticed, but at least you noticed yourself.
Oh, yeah. She's super smart.
Like, okay, clocking that. Okay.
Yeah. She's very, very intelligent. And I mean, I just keep thinking of Lisk. So if you don't know who that is, I suggest looking up the Long Island serial killer. It's a really interesting case. I don't know. Maybe we'll cover it on a later episode. Look it up if you're interested.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So she notices this, whatever. So they kind of hang out for a while, like watch TV, because I mean, he wants to be desired. And it's to him, I think it's more of like, come to my house and like pay attention to me. And other than just the sex.
Be a pseudo girlfriend for a minute and then.
Yeah. Weird.
Build up or whatever.
They do that. And then they are in his bed eventually, and he tries like touching her. I think she uses the word stroke. I'm not really sure. But she's kind of like not like reciprocating it. So then all of a sudden he like grabs the inside of her leg like this, like really hard, and like gives her just a very intense look, and it like freaks her out. Because he's gone from like stroking her, which I don't really know what she means by that. I'm assuming just like touching her to that, like all of a sudden.
Yes.
And she like chills go up all over her body. Yeah. And she is freaked out. And he, so they're in bed facing each other. Mm-hmm. So he does the weird look thing. And then he reaches away from her over the bed, like to his side of the bed. So his back is now facing her and he's reaching to the side and under the bed. And she like doesn't know what's going on, but she assumes he's reaching for that small gun that she doesn't know where it is.
Yes.
And he's like doing it long enough to where she like has these thoughts, you know?
Yeah.
It's not super quick.
Long and lingering.
Yeah. Like he's looking for something. And so she is like, I'm not going to wait to see what that is.
Yeah, probably a good idea.
So she gets her gun and in the heat of the moment, really built up this fear that she's kind of had all night, not to mention like the amount of psychological issues she probably has from being abused and assaulted repeatedly. All that kind of like comes together in her head and she shoots him in the back of the head. The bullet goes through his like, through the back of his head and out the front, and he dies instantly.
Whoa.
Which I think that when you think about that, it seems a little rash. But then at the same time, it's like, okay, well, what if he was reaching for a gun and then he turns around and shoots her? Then we're going to be like, oh, well, why didn't she shoot him?
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So like that, we'd be having a different conversation.
Yeah. So she totally, I think, took the right precaution and she looked out for herself and she got out of the situation. But at the same time, was he reaching for a gun? I don't know. It's a whole discussion. We're going to have it in a little bit. I have questions for you later. But
okay. So I won't put my two cents yet.
No, wait. I have a spot for you. Okay. So she then remembers that she has to come back with money. Like she, you know, so she takes his wallet, which has $172 in it. Mm-hmm. And she takes the two like rifles because she's going to like pawn them or something. Mm-hmm. And before she leaves, she calls 911 anonymously on his cell phone. And then she like
leaves,
hightails it out of there.
Perfect. Yeah.
So police find him dead. They respond to the 911 phone call and the investigation isn't really an investigation. I mean, there's like she's seen in his car.
Yeah.
The whole night on video footage and all the like all this other stuff. So it's not really an investigation. They know pretty much figure out who does it, who did it pretty quickly. And I don't even really want to talk about it because it's not that interesting.
Sure.
So they charge her with first degree murder, felony murder, and aggravated robbery. There's a trial.
Okay.
But before I tell you the outcome, now I have my questions for you.
Okay.
So first, pretend you're the jury.
Okay.
The defense presents the case that Denise is a victim of sex trafficking, which, yes, and that she killed Johnny in self-defense because she believed he was going to kill her. They also point out some sort of sketchy things that the detectives did. For example, they allege that they didn't fully Mirandize her, which is a contested point. And they just kind of like paint the picture that the whole system really took advantage of a sex trafficking victim.
Yeah.
So that's their case.
Sure.
And then the prosecution paints her as a really vindictive sex worker who just was there. Her whole motive for killing him was robbery. And which I'm like, she only took like three things.
Yes.
But so anyways, you're the jury. What is your verdict? And give me your thoughts on just everything up till now.
Okay. So since I'm going to be myself as a jury member.
Yes.
If that's okay. Okay. So
who else would I want you
I
to
don't
be
know.
Yourself?
Well, I don't know. I could possibly imagine that like someone who like me maybe like 6 years ago thought, you know, sex workers always saw them in such a negative light, I may have had a completely different opinion on what happened.
Do you mean like?
Like, I probably would have seen her as
6 years ago, as in like, because times are different now or what?
No, I'm different. Like, sorry, didn't clarify. But yeah, like, you know, I was in high school. I was, you know, very sheltered kid. Didn't really understand the weird ways of the world. And now, as an adult who talks about murder all the time, it's a little different.
Okay, I see what you're saying now.
Yeah, so as myself, as a jury member, I would probably vote for the defense. I would probably find her to be innocent. I wouldn't charge her with first degree, considering the situation. Obviously, she didn't go there with the intent to actually kill this person. That was not her original reason for going there.
Yeah.
And that alone in itself should make the murder charge second
well,
degree.
Well, the prosecution was saying that it's first degree because their theory of the case is that she sought out someone specifically to go back to their home with the intention of having sex then kill and rob them. So that's their premeditation theory is that the whole night was premeditated. She only intended to rob someone. She waited for someone to pick her up.
Oh.
You know.
Well, if they presented it like that, I might be convinced in favor of the prosecution because, again, she's in this really terrible situation, lives with this guy named Cutthroat or whatever his real name is. And I'm assuming that's a pseudonym.
It's also spelled with a K, which makes it cool.
Ooh, wow.
Cutthroat with a K.
Wow, he's so badass and gross. I don't even care. Yeah, I don't know. I would probably be more swayed if they argued it like that and then seeing her entire background. She's a runaway dealing with all of that. But at the same time, I would also sympathize with her as a female who is only 16, has to carry around a weapon because of the line of work that she's in. And this is her first night doing this, right?
Officially in this sense, yes. Like she has been raped in the past. I believe in a situation in which like Cutthroat got money out of like her having sex with people, but it was more of an arranged situation. So I think that's her first time finding her own client is what I'm saying.
Interesting. That's a difficult one to decide on. I would need like a couple hours to deliberate, right. I think, just because
but you see points on both sides.
Yes, there's so many extraneous situations and so many different variables that tie into it. And I always want, I don't know, I'm an advocate for women and I always think that I want to take things from their perspective. And if she felt threatened, I don't blame her for
especially
taking
because
out her
he
weapon.
Solicited her for sex.
Yes.
It's like, don't solicit people for sex if you don't want to, like, you know, risk violence.
Exactly.
I don't know. You're going to creep them out and scare them. And also, she's this, like, victim of multiple rapes and assaults of various kinds. And that definitely, you know, has to, like, mess with your head and make
Absolutely.
You paranoid.
Yes. And, I mean, the whole point of advocating for gun policies is to allow for people to have access to firearms in dangerous situations. So that's also something that I would be like, I'm actually kind of glad that she had a weapon on hand, even though I'm not a big proponent of that.
Right.
But still, I...
Band-aid on the fact that she has to be a sex worker issue.
Yes, exactly.
There's so many issues.
There's just so many and so many different... things that could sway different jury members in one direction or another. So for me, I would probably, if I had to pick, I would probably say I would side on the defense.
I think I definitely would. Her being a sex worker and him soliciting her at 16.
Yes. The age is something that is very pertinent, I think.
Right.
And she's like, so young.
Just soliciting someone for sex in general doesn't make you like deserve to be murdered. But I think considering the fact that she's in this situation where he's like intimidating her by showing her his guns, like what's the intention of that if it's not to like scare the shit out of you?
Right. Exactly. I mean, it's different than, like, look at my trophies. It's, like, showing someone a firearm to be impressive is actually kind of terrifying if you're not comfortable around that person.
And I don't think that the intention was to be impressive. I think it was to scare her.
I think it was to scare her or to threaten her. Yeah. I'm not sure either way. But I'm, like, that is a huge part of it as well. Mm-hmm. And I believe her whole story.
Me too. Always believe survivors.
Yes.
So, second question.
Yes.
So Denise is 16, like we mentioned, and so they have the trial. I'm not going to tell you the outcome yet, but there was also a question of whether to try her as a juvenile or as an adult. So she had a transfer hearing, which is a hearing where a judge determines whether you're going to be transferred into the adult court system. Mm-hmm. So my eventual question is going to be whether you think she should, but let me briefly explain juvenile transfers. Juvenile transfers are based on the belief that basically, like, juveniles can't, some juveniles who've committed serious and violent offenses can't be sufficiently punished in juvenile court because the punishments are so much less severe in juvenile court, mm-hmm. and that they can't be helped by the rehabilitative efforts of the juvenile justice system, which juvenile justice is very retribution and restorative focused as opposed to punishment. There definitely are punishments in juvenile justice.
Yes.
Which, by the way, here in Fort Collins, we have a really great juvenile justice system. That's not the case everywhere. So anyway, so that's a juvenile transfer. They can be done through three different means. You can have a prosecutorial direct file where the DA just decides to file it in adult court, and then that file is either, their filing of the charges is either accepted or denied. Mm-hmm. And then, so that's one way. You can also have someone can be transferred through statutory exclusion, which are laws in different states where you are automatically filed in adult court if you did X, Y, or Z. So it varies by state statute. Usually it'll be like if you're charged with murder, kidnap, or rape, in states that have those statutes, you're automatically filed into the adult system.
Mm-hmm.
But then the way that it happens in most cases, because it can happen, like, even if all of these three things are a possibility, usually it happens through a, what's the term I'm trying to think of? Sorry. I don't remember. Okay. judicial waiver. There we go.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is where, sorry, I'm trying to remember. I took a juvenile court, like juvenile delinquency class last semester. So I'm trying to like remember all these terms
remember
and sound smart.
Can you tell she wants to be a lawyer? Can anyone tell except for me? No.
It'll okay. be so fun. So I also really love juvenile law mm-hmm. and totally would be a guardian ad litem, like nobody's business, but that's yeah. a choice for later. So
I could see you doing that
in a discussion for
another time.
Another time.
In a different podcast.
But, okay, so with a judicial
waiver.
Good Lord. That's when you have a hearing where a judge decides whether to try you as a juvenile or as an adult.
Okay,
there's
gotcha.
Testimony. There's not a jury, obviously. It's just the judge. And there's, like, testimony. There's examinations. There's evidence. Kind of like, think grand jury, kind of.
Okay.
But it's just the judge.
Okay, yeah, gotcha.
So that's what happens in this case. And so do you think that she should have been tried as an adult or a juvenile based on her age of 16 and the crime of murder?
See, okay, so I hearken back to the lovely Ed Kemper episode where he was
He was mm-hmm. also tried as a...
as a juvenile. He was put through juvenile court despite the fact that he killed his grandparents.
Right.
And I think that based off of that, and that was California back when all of these crazy things were happening. Do I guess what I think
what do you want?
Well, I would rather try her as a juvenile considering she's a runaway and then maybe put her through a rehabilitation process. And then move her life into a better position. At least that's what I would want.
Right.
Because of, I mean, like, due to all of the circumstances in this case, obviously this girl is troubled and she needs help. And that's what I would advocate for. So, yeah, if I was a judge sitting and listening to everything that you have just told me, I would be persuaded to probably try her in a juvenile court.
Okay. And what do you think happened?
They probably put her in an adult court. They probably moved her into the
adult system.
Yeah.
See, so I'm with you that I'm always a proponent of trying as a juvenile because the argument against it is that they can't be sufficiently punished in the juvenile system. But the argument for it is that a juvenile's brain hasn't even developed to the point where they can consciously make good decisions. Like, why are we can't hold the same standard to a juvenile whose life experiences are nowhere near where they should be to be able to determine whether or not to commit a certain crime. And also,
exactly. And it shouldn't be like we shouldn't try a juvenile for murder when the murder was something like this. Whereas in Ed Kemper's case, it's a little bit different And I would have taken a different opinion on
that. Well, and at Kemper's, I'm still an advocate for trying as a juvenile because all of his experiences up until that point informed his decision to murder his grandparents, which were being locked in a basement by his abusive mom. So it's like, when you're a kid and your brain hasn't fully developed, all of your decisions are based on the trauma you experience or the even just things you've been exposed to, like how you perceive other people dealing with stressful or scary situations and what you see as right. That's only informed by your surroundings.
True. And
yeah,
like punishing a child who is already influenced by great tragedy is going to further implement them and their brain development. And we see that with Ed Kemper as he is subjected to extreme punishment. And not that like our judicial system lays out extreme, extreme punishment. We're not hanging people by their thumbs from the wall anymore. But still, I mean, isolation,
that's like just, the grossest thing ever.
I know, I'm sorry.
Where did that, I love that you, that was like the example you thought of. I'm well, sorry, you go know, on.
Like when I think about extreme punishment, that's what I think about is like people.
Hanging people from their thumbs. Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
Is that weird?
I know where your mind is. No, I always think of like Reservoir Dogs cutting an ear off. So
oh, gross. Yeah, that too. That's terrible. Yeah. I don't like it.
That song is ruined for me. The Stuck in the Middle with You, that song. Yeah. I can't listen to it without thinking of someone's ear getting cut off.
I've only seen that one scene from Reservoir Dogs. I've never actually watched that movie.
Why did you see that? Okay. Whoa. Explain to me the context in which you were like, I need to watch this one scene.
No, I think it was in like one of those like Mr. Mojo videos. You know, they're like the ones that are like top five romantic comedies. And then they do bits from
that is not a romantic comedy.
Well, no, I was just using an example.
Okay, they're listicles.
To describe.
Okay, got
yes,
you.
They're video listicles. Okay. And I think it was in one of those. But yeah, I mean,
where was that going?
Ed Kemper. So,
okay.
Yes. So I can see where you're coming from and still trying him in a juvenile court. I would also still do that, but his rehabilitation would have to be a much more intense process than, say,
someone who's just self-defense.
Yes.
And also, there's kind of an argument. I think there's an actual title for this argument or theory, but I don't know what it is, where the more you're exposed to criminals, so like, there's a reason why in juvenile court or in all court, really, they separate the low level offenders from the very violent offenders, because the more you're exposed to that, the more you're going to be susceptible to it. So there's an argument in juvenile court for like these kids are still developing and their brains are still being molded by their experiences. So let's not make those experiences prison. So we have a trial. And it's in either juvenile or adult court. So in part two, I'm going to tell you where and what happened.
Wonderful.
So thanks for listening.
Bye. Some hard-ass questions.